Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call the Legacy Committee meeting on February 6th to order. Thank you, everybody, for coming. Everybody's has a bunch of commitments and have kind of told me that they're unfortunately going to be coming and going and different things. But so we're going to move forth and hear some good presentations today, and we're excited about that. I was wondering if anybody would be willing to move the minutes from our January 30th meeting.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Heitzman. Any comments to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor of the minutes of the January 30th meeting, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The minutes are approved. Thank you, Representative Heitzman. We had people fighting for that. That was good. So I'd like to invite up here. We're kind of focused on the radio and all the efforts that are done in this area around the state. So I'd like to invite up Minnesota Public Radio and hear their presentation today. Mr. Cavanaugh, you're coming. You're going to tell us about how you coach the U.S. Olympic curling team. I don't know if maybe that'll be part of your presentation. But
Mr. Chair, unfortunately, Schuster could not attend today, so we'll be focused on music and the legacy projects from Minnesota Public Radio.
Thank you, Mr. Cavanaugh. And go ahead when you're ready.
Mr. Chair, members, I am John Cavanaugh with Minnesota Public Radio. Joining me today is Garrett McQueen, overnight host producer with Classical NPR, and also Brian Newhouse, managing director, Classical NPR also. First, I want to thank you all for opening your offices for meetings with us earlier. We have gone over with more detail than we can probably do in this period of time, but we do want to at least highlight some of the programs that Minnesota Public Radio does with the legacy funds that you so kindly allocate to NPR and that the the residents of Minnesota have approved as well. We also want to thank you for giving us time today to present our projects and then also our 2020-21 legacy grant requests as well. Since our beginning, Minnesota Public Radio has built a statewide system of networks. We have over 80 stations. 97% of the households in Minnesota actually receive an NPR signal. We have about 1 million listeners each week. And our coverage allows us to partner with the emergency alert system to provide not only a signal or any emergency alerts to our listeners, but also to all the other broadcast media throughout the state. The same coverage gives Minnesota artists and audiences throughout the state and the nation. And, excuse me, I should have said that there is a packet that should have been provided in your folders that has a copy of the PowerPoint presentation that I'm making right now. If you take a look at the map that's in front of you here, I believe it's on slide 4, this is an indication of some of the activities that have gone on throughout the state of Minnesota that in part have been sponsored by the Legacy Amendment. Again, we try to hit across the state. We don't include everything that we do because the map would be probably solid. And again, we're very proud of the coverage that we do get with our legacy information. In 2018 and 19 fiscal years, we received $3.2 million, $1.5 million in the FY18 and 1.7 in FY19. I'd like to run through some of the things that we have done. I'm not going to get through all of them, but I do provide with you in that folder that I gave or provided the committee staff. There is an actual report of our FY 2018 annual report as well that provides more detail. Before I go into those, I like to point out that the Minnesota legislature, back when the legacy amendment was started, you actually put together some guiding principles that we follow very closely at NPR. Among those are preserving Minnesota's cultural history, expanding arts events live, showcasing Minnesota artists, and expanding music education in Minnesota. One of the exact quotes from the guide says, investments in public broadcasting should expand Minnesota's access to knowledge, information, access to arts, and Minnesota history and cultural heritage. One of the items that we focus upon when we're talking about preserving cultural heritage and focusing on history is NPR has an archive. We actually have many stories. Some of them are print stories. Some of them are audio files as well from throughout history. They are accessible to the public. And one of the things that we focused on over the last year is making sure that Gary Eichten's program, Midday Collection, was actually saved for history's sake as well. Again, that is accessible to you and also the public and the residents of Minnesota. Another aspect that you have given us, or a directive that you've given us, is funding for arts education should include lifelong educational activities meant to impart knowledge, teach a new creative skill, or further developing existing skill in any arts discipline. One of the things that we do throughout the state is a program called Bring to Sing. And Brian is a major aspect of the Bring to Sing program, where we actually have artists and conductors come into a community and provide, over a one-day period, instruction with community members. And when I say community members, it's not just the communities. For example, on the front page here, it's Moorhead. It's not just Moorhead that's attending. In fact, Fergus Falls, where I taught for 10 years, actually was a major contributor to that. But there were people from communities throughout that area of western Minnesota. It's a free event for singers. When they, after they have an afternoon of instruction, they actually have a concert as well where they sing, and we do record that as well. Besides Moorhead, we also have gotten to Rochester. During the grand opening of the Capitol, we also had a Bring the Sing event. We've been to Duluth, we've been to the Como Park Pavilion, and also the State Fair during that time with Bring the Sing. We also have what's called Art Hounds. And Art Hounds is a weekly program, and it actually highlights events throughout the state in many different mediums. It fosters engagement, it builds community throughout Minnesota, highlighting those Minnesota artists. It spreads enthusiasm for events, and it broadens our horizons, reflects community and diversity. In FY18, Art Hounds actually highlighted over 136 different community-nominated artists or ensembles. It represented more than a dozen different art disciplines, and maintained its commitment to statewide reach within 30% of artists or ensembles featured from greater Minnesota. We also hit over 8 of the 11 regional art districts. I think most telling is this next slide, and that is we've had artists respond to our hosts of Art Hounds after they have been highlighted on the program. The first is from Lucy Amundsen, and her quote essentially says, as soon as we were featured on Art Hounds, people showed up. They actually knew. They listen, and they follow it, and they show up to, in this case, it was an author, a poet, doing a presentation in Duluth. I like this next quote, too, from an improv comedian, Jill Bernard. We talk about the Art Hounds bump. When an Art Hound talked about our kids' matinee, we had a line out the door that weekend. Again, Art Hounds provides great coverage throughout the state, making sure that the artist community and the state of Minnesota actually knows what's going on throughout the state.
Mr. Kavanaugh, I'm not going to interrupt you throughout the whole testimony, but just real quickly, could you tell me where I'd find Art Hounds when I turn on the public radio, like what time or what...
Mr. Chair, members, when I am in the afternoon, I know that when I'm listening to NPR News, Class Hounds will appear during that time frame. I believe it's later afternoon, And I apologize for not knowing the exact time, but I want to say it's around 4 or 5 o'clock.
Thank you. Please continue. And by the way, you, Mr. Cavanaugh, you got all sorts of brownie points from the capital investment chair by including the plan from the first year and recognizing that with the principals.
Mr. Chair, we saw
all sorts of excitement over there. So.
Excellent. I appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Class Notes is one of our most recognizable and most most time and effort is put into our Class Notes program. Brian Newhouse with Minnesota Public Radio Classical, or NPR Classical, actually deals mostly with the Class Notes program. So I'm going to give him an opportunity to highlight some of the aspects of Class Notes.
Mr. Chair and members.
Mr. McQueen. Oh. Yep, go ahead. Is that who it is?
Mr. Newhouse.
Mr. Newhouse, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr.
I'm
Chair.
Sorry.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you for this time. Class Notes is essentially a four-pronged project, and we're incredibly grateful for the funding that's made it happen. We feel that we are changing kids' lives and serving teachers to inspire kids. We're places especially where they don't have the resources. So we're very excited about this project. The biggest, probably most visible one is Class Notes Artists. You'll see some of the reach we've had with the program in a slide coming up. But this is where we hit two of the elements of the legacy requirements. We coordinate with artists around the state of Minnesota. We do the scheduling, and we bring them into schools where music education is at risk or has gone away in particular. And so we can bring something that's surprising and inspiring and brings impact into those kids' lives. This is all free to the schools. The main job for us is to actually connect the artists with the schools and work out the schedule. Those of you who have got kids, you know how tightly schools are scheduled these days. So we have about a dozen or so artists each year, or ensembles, that we work to put into schools. A new program this year is Class Notes High School, and the innovation there is most of our work to date has been with little kids. It's been in elementary school. Mostly around 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th grade. It's really our sweet spot where we've focused Class Notes so far. But we've been getting more and more requests from high school as the word of this spreads. Can you come to my school, even though they're not in elementary school? So we're piloting a program where ensembles are going into a few high schools this year. Another project is our workshops, where we have... here in the land of 10,000 choirs, we've worked to find a really talented choral conductor. And so he is going into schools, particularly in greater Minnesota, where there is a good choral program, largely with persons of color or underserved schools. And he has a residency with those high schools. We also have an instrumental version of that same. And her name is Tamara Gonzalez. She's bilingual, so she can go into schools in the metro and in other parts of greater Minnesota where there's a largely Spanish-speaking population and bring to them instruction in how to be a better musician, how to learn more about their instrument and play an ensemble. And our Class Notes video library is the last piece of it. This is a growing library of music lessons. Each one is about 3 to 4 to 5 minutes long. They're all created, they're written by us, and all of this content, especially the videos, align with state education standards. So we deliver something directly to the teacher that he or she or they may not have. So a resource that aligns with what they're supposed to be doing as educators. And as time allows, I would like to show one as much as we can. This one is about 4.5, 5 minutes long. You'll get audio and video, and then that introduces our next, my colleague from Classical Minnesota Public Radio, Garrett Queen, who can answer some of maybe how this works together.
Thank you, Mr. Newhouse. And yes, please, I think we do have some time to watch it. And
Mr. Chair, members, I do want to highlight that during the 2017-18 school year, Class Notes reached over 29,000 students at 109 schools. I believe that year we were aiming to reach 45 schools. Again, Mr. Newhouse and his staff have done a wonderful job at making sure that we do as much as we can with the allocation that we receive. 60% of those schools were in Greater Minnesota. We do actually try to reach out to legislators when we are in their district. So if they wish to come and see what the Class Notes program is all about, they can do it live with students from their districts as well. And with that, here's an example of one of the Class Notes videos.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Kavanaugh.
Music sometimes makes you want to sing and dance. How would you dance to this music? Its composer wanted to make it sound like a special kind of dancing, flamenco dancing, from the country of Spain. In flamenco dancing, the dancers often stomp their feet and use super fast foot motions, and sometimes clap their hands and snap their fingers. Do you hear those sounds imitated in this music?
It reminds me of like people spinning or like moving really fast.
People are riding on horses and riding carpets, like magic carpets.
It keeps on hitting loud.
I can hear the people dancing.
I see volcanoes exploding and other dinosaurs are running.
I see people dancing to the song.
And now the music is changing. It sounds too slow to dance to, I think. Remember, sometimes music makes you want to sing and dance. If this isn't music for dancing, maybe it's for singing. I notice a beautiful melody with a few flourishes. I imagine a singer sadly singing alongside a guitar player. In this version, our guitarist gets to play the melody and the accompaniment. What does this make you think of?
I feel like it's telling a story.
I kind of imagine the ocean. It sounds like a sunset.
Feels like there's different colors, like red, orange, golden, rainbow. I see other dragons that are different colors with black and white and yellow, and they're learning how to fly, and they're baby dragons.
The composer of this music was named Isaac Albéniz. He was from Spain. The sounds of this music would have been familiar to him, the sounds of his home. What are the sounds of your home? Sounds like our dancers are back. I can hear that fast dancing tempo again. Those sharp and sudden accents remind me of our flamenco dancers clapping their hands and stomping their feet. Did you notice that our composer Albéniz asked the guitarist to play in lots of different ways to imitate those sounds? Did you notice that the music started with one idea, flamenco dancing, and shifted to something different, a slow, sad song, and then shifted back to our original idea? That's a common pattern in music we call ABA. You may have noticed it in pictures, paintings, or even poems. Our dance music is slowing down. The dance is coming to an end. Maybe this music made you want to sing. Maybe this music made you want to dance. Remember that our composer was sharing music from his home. How will you share music from your home?
That was fantastic. So, Mr. Newhouse, I believe? Oh, there's more. Sorry. I'm going to get yelled at. At home, my wife loves the outtakes, so yeah.
The fact, Mr. Chair, members, I was trying to highlight the fact that we do take the rules
Mr.
of
Kevin.
Legacy funding. Oh, thank you. We do take the rules very seriously. We make sure that the logo is properly displayed and the people of Minnesota are actually given credit for the work that they've helped to provide through the Legacy Fund.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, one final word from me before
yes.
Mr. McQueen. In that video, one of the things that we strive very hard to do is to bring a kind of educational impact to the teachers. So right there, some of the lessons just coalesced are in form, ABA, you saw it there, which helps in literacy and pattern recognition. So it's not just about music. It's trying to serve the larger educational needs of the school. And actually ask them to kind of fire up their imagination as well, which increases joy in the classroom as well. So it's a complex product that we try to put together. And turn it over to Mr. McQueen here.
Mr. McQueen, thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you so much for hearing me today. Access to classical music and the arts is beyond important from my perspective. An early exposure to singing as a kindergartner for me led to interest in band when I went to middle school. That led to me studying music, earning 2 degrees. I spent many years playing professionally in orchestras, 2 years with the Detroit Symphony Orchestra, 5 years with the Knoxville Symphony Orchestra. I slowly began to transition into public radio, and I started at WUOT-FM in Knoxville. I eventually reached NPR here in St. Paul. And when I was approached to participate in this Class Notes video, you know, I immediately thought, yes, there was no question in my mind, because I thought about my story. I thought about how important that initial access to the arts changed my entire life. I'm not sure what my career or my profession would look like if it weren't for that early access, those first music classes I ever took. And Class Notes videos and the other things we do at NPR for education really, really fuel that, and in turn create a more equitable and a more equal society overall. It's really important also to note that the guitarist you heard, Melina Petkovich, is a product of the St. Paul Conservatory of Music. So not only are children that get to see these Class Notes videos, not only are they being exposed to the arts, but exposed to the arts from a local perspective, which I also think is very important. In closing, I would just like to say I appreciate everything that this body does for NPR. Our role in the world is to create ways for children and adults to have access and really understand the power of classical music, and we appreciate the role that you play in helping us do that. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. McQueen. Mr. Kavanaugh.
Mr. Chair, members, if you haven't heard Garrett or Mr. McQueen on radio, he is on from actually midnight to 6 a.m. On Classical 24. And one of the wonderful things about, as you listen to him, he's not simply spinning discs. He's actually telling stories as well. They're actually interconnected with the music. So, again, him being the focus of this video is very apt, simply because he is able to tie not only music, but tied to stories that come along that really excite students about learning as well. So again, we greatly appreciate Mr. McQueen for being here today. I have talked to some members. They have requested, how do I get my schools and my district involved? Actually, I provide on the PowerPoint presentation a link to that. I will also get that to your offices in electronic form as well. Also, some have asked about if I know someone who's very talented, how do I get them involved? We also have a web link for that as well, and I will do the same in an electronic form to your office. There are so many other programs that Minnesota Public Radio does. Choral Stream, regional classical broadcast recordings, whether it's the Symphony in Duluth or the Symphony in Rochester, Moorhead as well. Mm-hmm. So, again, it's all over the state. The current goes to, we've gone to Winona, Duluth, many other events. Again, the list is long, and you can see there. But again, I can't give it adequate time to explain each one of them, but I'm more than happy to answer those as well if you do have questions. One of the things I love to point out is a great story from Minnesota Public Radio, and that is one of the directives that you provided us regarding the legislative guide for legacy funds is that the funds should be long-term. This isn't, it shouldn't end just because the funding does, and I believe we're about 15 years, or 13 years, somewhere there, what, 10?
We're in
10 years away from that.
Oh, 15 from the end.
Okay, there we go, and thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, we want these programs to continue, and one of the success programs is we established a program called Minnesota Varsity where we bring students in, whether they're composers, whether they're musicians or vocal artists, and they have kind of an American Idol circumstance. We actually started that with Minnesota Legacy Funds. We have now found a private supporter who actually which actually means that we don't use legacy funds for this anymore. It does continue, and hopefully will continue. I believe there's news today that one of our former participants received a large award as a cellist at a Detroit competition this weekend. I'm very impressed. Music talent that I just don't have. There's some information in the packet about how we spend the legacy funds or how we did for FY 2018. If you take a look, a lot of the ways that we determine our success is also listed on there, whether that's highlighting Minnesota artists. You look at the number of streams that we've had, over 410,000. You look at the page views, over 1.7 million page views. On-air listeners, and it says projected 50,000. It was actually 51,000. If you look at supporting music education, I went through some of those numbers with you already. The counties served were at, we projected 16 counties would be served. We actually have hit 39. Again, those numbers will increase hopefully over time as well. We do live events throughout Minnesota. The local performers, we've had over 150 local performers over this last year. Preserving Minnesota history, we've had over 1,400 stories digitized, including Gary Eichten's. We sit before you, and hopefully we will be able to perform even better than what we have been doing at this point in time. We will be coming with a $3.9 million request for FY 2021. Again, I am happy to sit for questions, as is Mr. Newhouse and Mr. McQueen.
Thank you very much for coming, Mr. Kavanaugh and Mr. McQueen and Mr. Newhouse. Great job, and just happened to be listening to you this morning, but I got to be honest, I didn't stay on very long. You were doing some fundraising, and might have pushed a button fairly quick. So sorry about that. Representative Green, I believe I have some questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Kavanaugh, thank you, by the way, for the information that you got me, not just in here. This is a lot of stuff I was looking for, but the extra stuff you got me, I appreciate that very much. A couple of questions. You had mentioned things like the Bring the Sing, Art Hounds, and Class Notes. Did any of these exist before Legacy, or were they created with Legacy funds?
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, those are all new programs. They did not exist before Legacy.
Okay. Representative Green.
Thanks. And the cost for each of them, is it use up quite a bit of the Legacy funds, or is it a smaller portion?
Mr. Kavanaugh.
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, I believe there's a breakdown more so in the FY18 report, which was also included in the and I honestly don't know the exact breakdown, and if it's not provided in the FY18 report, I can actually get those numbers separated out for you.
Representative Green.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's not a big deal. It's just a question that I had as I was looking through it. And then, you know, congratulations on the success of the varsity program. Do you foresee the other programs reaching that as well?
Mr. Kavanaugh.
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, I would hope that is where we're heading. Again, I think there's a lot of value that particularly like Class Notes provide. It would be wonderful if we could provide that without state assistance.
Representative and just Green. One more, then. You got pretty good participation rate here, more than you expected, and that's great. Suppose, let's say, for instance, the Legacy funds dried up. Nobody bought anything in Minnesota. Probably, hopefully, not going to happen. But is there enough interest out there, do you believe, in the communities to keep these things going after funding?
Mr. Kavanaugh.
Mr. Chair, members, I believe that the arts community is always vital for any successful state. I have lived in Minnesota all my life, and I'm confident that the arts community will thrive even if Legacy funds are not there. It just provides another outlet and a little support as well. So, yes, I believe they will continue.
And then one more, Mr. Chair. And then on the last page of the graph, or not the graphs, but it says Preserving Minnesota History. It looks like you fell a little short, and I'm not ending this on a down note. This is not a criticism. I'm just wondering why why you didn't get as many stories digitized as you maybe projected.
Mr. Kavanaugh.
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, I believe that if you look at our previous circumstance, we actually over-delivered in the previous biennium. The digitizing is not always easy, and it depends on staff. And one of the difficulties that we have had is actually finding staff that can do that as well. So, again, I'm confident we can pick that up as well. But, again, we're not going to, if we have good standards and good you don't, as a former coach, your projections, what you want your team to accomplish may not always happen, but at the same time, you still want to keep going toward that goal.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Green. Okay. We have, Mr. Kavanaugh, we have two wonderful storytellers here. Have any of their stories been digitized? Representative Murphy is a wonderful storyteller, and Representative Erdahl is also a fairly okay story to
Mr. Chair, members, I'm not certain of this, but I believe that one of your committee members serving as the role of Lincoln may actually be in our archive as well.
Thank you, Mr. Kavanaugh, and thank you for not making us listen to that. Any other questions for the presenters? Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You inspired me to ask the question. One of the things that we usually hear when you come before us is that the responsibility of your Minnesota Public Radio is one of delivering emergency warnings and attentions. And I did think about this yesterday, and Representative Lilly said that you're busy fundraising yesterday on your station. And the three times that I turned to NPR to find out whether what time I should go home at night or not. You were indeed using the opportunity to fundraise. And how do you keep your responsibility to for emergency warnings and public service? How do you keep that prevailing at the time that you're fundraising?
Mr. Kavanaugh.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, with the emergency alert system, a lot of the, for example, the BCA issues an Amber Alert, that would actually precede anything that we have on the air at the time. The weather alerts, I'm not so certain unless there is an emergency declaration and an emergency alert essentially listed for weather. I don't believe that is the case. However, I do know that our hosts in listening yesterday spoke a lot about weather. And so, but at the same time, I'm not sure that that would take precedent over, that the talking about weather would take precedent over anything else on the air.
Representative Murphy.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think you should think about that again. And I know there was a lot of talk about weather, but there wasn't any real updates later in the afternoon and early evening, except be careful and drive slow and that kind of thing. I did get home very safely after 9 o'clock and before 10, so no problem, but I was it did stick in my mind.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kavanaugh, I'm happy to bring that message back to our crew, in particular our meteorologist.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Murphy.
They're really good at 7 o'clock in the morning, but we don't have too many meteorologists around in the evening, I don't think.
It's interesting on this very issue. There's also a kind of a legacy radio channel that I often listen to, and sometimes when you know that there's a major weather event going on and you really can't get weather there, either, or traffic information, there might be a basketball game on or something that just doesn't seem quite as important as the major blizzard. Representative Zhang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a question. How many programs do you have right now on PR that's led by people of color, indigenous people? Because I remember a couple of years ago, there was a programming, what was it, like every Friday, and then you guys got rid of it, and the community got very disappointed at NPR. So I'm just wondering where you guys are right now, having programs that's led by people of color, indigenous people.
Mr. Kevin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Zhang, actually, I don't have a specific number on that. I can get you that information, and we'll happily do that. I do know that we do have a focus at NPR of making sure that all communities are represented on our airwaves. And I do know that we have a new program coming on, and I can't think of the name, and I'm not sure if it's for public right now, but I think that meets the criteria that you're talking about. But I will gladly get you that information.
Thank you.
Representative Zhang, anything else? Okay. Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much for coming forward and telling your story. I noticed there's a couple school districts you might want to include. I noticed, I just quickly went through, there's Roseville, White Bear Lake might need, Chanhassen might need a stop, and then Hermantown. I just, not to say anything, but those are just kind of a quick, and I don't know if I got every town in our committee, but.
Mr. Chair, members.
Mr. Kavanaugh.
We are always looking to improve, and I think one of the things that we're going to continue to improve upon is reaching out to school districts so that all are provided as well. Right now, we do rely upon the school districts to make the connection with us, and again, our outreach efforts are hopefully improving to make sure that those districts are taken care of.
Thank you all for coming today. I really do believe you've been good stewards through this the first 10 years of legacy, and I think that's important when we go to renew at the end of this. I think that'll help tell our story. And I know you're out trying to encourage other areas of the funds, in the news stories. I've heard that often, too, where you're talking about positive efforts, maybe whether it's in clean water area or or Parks and Trails or other things make your newscasts and other products. So that's our doesn't always measure in some of this as well. So you're bringing that to the table as well. So thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you.
So now we're joined by the folks with Ampers when Mr. Glazer, go ahead when you're ready. And while he's setting up, I just want to briefly mention tonight at again, I mentioned on the House floor, and I just want to make sure that you all know that you're all welcome and encouraged to come if it fits into your schedule. But tonight at the History Center is the a bit of a celebration for the 10th anniversary of the of this very fund, the Legacy Fund, and it starts at 5:30 to 8, and there's a program starting at around 6:30, and certainly I would hope that I hope that you can find time and especially encourage our we have two former chairs and certainly hope that they are able to make it and we're all interested. If thank you. Go ahead, sir. Sorry.
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, my name is Joel Glazer. I am the CEO of AMPRS, the Association of Minnesota Public Educational Radio Stations. I am joined this afternoon by Bob Fantuzzo, a Minnesota musician, and we will hear not only a little bit about his background, but he'll actually provide a little bit of his art for us today as well. Apparently, the PowerPoint is not wanting to advance.
We're sending, sending a dial-a friend here.
There we go. My apologies. I'd like to take just a brief moment because there are, while there are certainly familiar faces, there are some new faces here. I want to take a moment to explain what is AMPRS. So AMPRS is the Association of Minnesota Public Educational Radio Stations. We represent a total of 18 different radio stations throughout the state. We'll get into that a little bit more in just a moment. But I want to first and foremost explain who we are not. And the reason for that is when I first got started in broadcasting, I was in commercial radio and commercial television for many years, more so than my 10 years in public. And I always thought that public radio and public television was all the same. It was all under one giant umbrella of public broadcasting, probably in part because in many states that is the case. Oftentimes the television and the radio stations are combined, or there is only one public radio network. That is not the case here in Minnesota, and we are not affiliated with Minnesota Public Radio, who you just heard from. We are not affiliated with Twin Cities Public Television or Minnesota Public Television. We are completely independent. 17 of the 18 stations that are throughout the state are eligible for state funds. The 18th station is KUMM in Morris, and by statute, they do not they are not eligible for state funding. So KUMM in Morris does not receive funding from the state, but the rest of the stations do. My apologies there, too. Having some technical snafus today. AMPRS serves primarily underserved communities. And how do you define underserved communities? Within AMPRS, we define underserved as communities of color, Native American, African American, new immigrants. We have programs in 12 different languages, Hmong, Somali, Oromo, Ojibwe. We also cater towards students.
Greetings, this is Navik, and I'm here to talk about Ojibwe language.
So that was actually one of a very brief part of a legacy program from KOJB in Leech Lake, and it's called Ojibwe Moan. That is a 10-minute weekly feature that puts Ojibwe words into context. I believe KBFT does an Ojibwe Moan, and they do a word of the day. But in the case of KOJB, they do a longer segment to try and put it in context so that people can use the word. For those of you who don't know, The Ojibwe language is dying off with the elders, so there is a significant effort to try and maintain and preserve that language, and several of our stations are actively participating in that language preservation, and that's just one example. We do a lot of work with students. We work with 1,200 to 1,500 students a year. Those are traditional students. I should point out that we also have a tremendous number of non-traditional students. And what I mean by that is stations like KFAI here in the Twin Cities is open for volunteers. Well, all of our stations are. It just happens to be KFAI takes even more than most. They have as many as, I believe, 250 at the moment. And you can walk in the door and you can learn how to run the audio board. You can learn how to become a host. You can come in with a suggestion for a legacy project, which would be vetted by the general manager and see if it does qualify. And we have volunteers who start out in that form. All of the stations are completely independent. They are programmed by and for their local community. And none of them are allowed to run commercials, which leads to some of the confusion between us and Minnesota Public Radio. Now, you did just hear a lengthy presentation from Minnesota Public Radio. So I do want to take just a moment, though. Oftentimes, we are not on the same day. And when we are not on the same day, there is tremendous confusion. Even being on the same day, oftentimes, there is confusion. So I want to take just a minute to kind of run through some of the similarities and differences. We are both licensed as public, and neither of us can run commercials. That's pretty much where the similarities end. We are an association rather than a network. And what that means is each of the stations, and I used to have to say, if you could magically listen to WTIP in Grand Marais and KQAL in Winona, I don't have to say magically anymore because of streaming. You can hop online and you can listen to them at the exact same time. You're going to hear very different programming because WTIP is programming for Grand Marais and KQAL in Winona is programming for Winona. We are not taking one program from the Twin Cities, sending it out statewide, nationwide, and worldwide. They're all programming for their specific community. I'm not saying that one is better than the other, but it's just important that as funders that you understand the difference. All our stations are licensed to a college, school, university. They could be licensed like KMOJ or KAXE, KMOJ here in the Twin Cities, KAXE in Grand Rapids. They could be licensed directly to the community that they served, or they are licensed to a tribal government, or in one case, in the case of KKWE in White Earth, they are licensed to a nonprofit affiliated with the White Earth Land Recovery Project. So they are college, schools, or university, whereas with Minnesota Public Radio, they are all licensed to Minnesota Public Radio. Probably the biggest difference would be when you look at the revenue. If you pool all of our stations' revenues together, we might get up to about $9 million. When you look at the 990 for FY16 for Minnesota Public Radio, it's about $100 million. So if nothing else, when you walk away to understand the difference, we're kind of the mom-and-pop corner drugstore, corner hardware store, where everyone knows your name. They're going to be more of a Target or Home Depot. Again, I'm not knocking them. I shopped at Target 2 weeks ago. I bought my snowblower at Home Depot. Today, on the way back, I'm going to be stopping at S&S Hardware because I ran out of salt yesterday trying to salt my driveway. So there is room for both. We like to refer to Ampers as community radio and then Minnesota Public as public radio. So that's the way that we really kind of define the difference. Just touch briefly on where we are located. I mentioned we get as far north as Grand Marais and Thief River Falls. We get as far south as Winona and Mankato. Our newest stations are KRPR in Rochester, WGZS in Fond du Lac, and KBXE in the Bagley-Bemidji area. And those are identified as the red circles there on the screen. Occasionally when I get new members, they will come to me and say, hey, Joel, we really want a community radio station. Why don't you have a community radio station in our community? Ampers does not buy, sell, broker, build radio stations. We are an organization that serves to support them. If a community does get a permit, a build permit, which is unlikely because there really are not any more licenses out there from the FCC, but if one should become available and it fell under the qualifications of 129D14, we could look at them. Well, even if they did not receive state funding, we could still represent them like KUMM and work with them. However, we don't expect any more in the near future because the market is really licensed out. Should also point out, because there was a proliferation recently of low-power FMs, Amperes does not work with low-power FMs. The main difference that's going to be, a low-power FM is 100 watts, and it's going to have a range of 2 to 5, maybe 10 miles, but it's usually more in the 2 to 5-mile range. It's going to depend on what buildings and things are around it, but it's a very, very small, very local, very niche. Oftentimes religious, which is partly why we do not work with low-power FMs. Low-power FMs are not eligible for state funds. That's another part of why we don't work with them, but also our resources. We went from 12 stations to 18 stations since I have been working here in 9 years. That has stretched us pretty thin. So as a result, we are not working with low-power FMs, but it's important to understand that they are out there and they are not affiliated with Amperes. The legacy programming, just like Amperes itself, is incredibly, incredibly diverse.
There's a place not far from here in good old Minnesota. There's a crop these wall as an oven pike and any old kind of fish you like. Be sure to bring your rod and reel when you fish in Minnesota. You can catch all the fish you want, make sure that it's your quota.
Now, this afternoon, when that's running through your head and you want to kill me, don't blame me. You can blame your chair, who said to make sure that it was fun and entertaining and that we stand out a little bit and have hands-on, which we'll get to here in just a moment.
I liked it.
So, and I will tell you, yesterday as I was putting this together, I could not get that out of my head. Polka, actually, in the northwest corner of Minnesota, is incredibly popular. So much so that KSRQ in Thief River Falls had enough demand that they have a 24/7, 365 polka cast that you can stream at any time, and you can listen to polka, very heavily Minnesota polka, but there is a 24-hour polka cast that is out there. We go from as fun and upbeat from that to...
Welcome to our special report called Sex Trafficking, the New Slavery, hosted by Chantel Sings and Freddie Bell. In the coming hour, you'll hear about the damage caused by commercial sexual exploitation, some of the causes behind it, and some ideas on how we can help end it and free those people trapped within this illegal economy.
Little heavier than the upbeat polka, but yet a very important part of our culture and what is going on and is really today's modern-day slavery. And we spent an hour doing a documentary on that, and when we have actually, in the following year, in FY19, we are working on 2 more hours of following up on that because there was so much interest. With that, Mr. Chair, members, with your permission, I would like to, before I continue with my testimony, turn the mic over to Minnesota musician Bob Pantuzzo, with your permission.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Pantuzzo?
Yes.
Thank you very much for coming, and go ahead, sir.
Thank you. I have been fortunate to receive legacy funding for 2 projects. The project that we most currently did, we called Music Without Borders, and we did that with students from Fair School and earlier in the year with students, elementary school students at the Urban Arts Academy, an after schools program. And the whole project was that the students, we had a workshop where students made handmade drums and shakers. And we're going to pass those around so you can see. Now, this happens to be a young lady from Fair School, and I said, do you have any art? Are you an artist? And she said, no. And I don't know. I think she is. But the whole process of the workshop was that the students had the opportunity to express themselves visually in terms of how they decorated their instruments, but then musically. And the whole process was that the concert that we performed with them was improvisation. And so they were learning how to listen to each other, how to work with each other to create music in the moment. The Fair School students were music students, and they walked away with this grand experience and afterwards thanked me. They had the opportunity to play with 5 professional musicians on stage. an experience that they will carry throughout their life. The other project, which is dear to me, was called Weaving of Traditions. And there, it was a series of concerts focusing on jazz musicians with Native American heritage. My primary instrument is the Native American flute. And I thought, what would happen, what would their music sound like if they had access to the instrument of their culture? So we, in the concerts, we perform music of Miles Davis, Duke Ellington, Charles Mingus. The list goes on. I have a list of over 70 jazz musicians that have Native roots. And it's an under-documented aspect of that genre of music. Not only did I benefit from these concerts, but I was able to obtain gigs with the World Flute Society, the Twin Cities Jazz Festival, Social Theory, Politics, and the Arts International Convention asked us to perform this. And that was a result of this the concerts funded by the Legacy Grant. I think for me, the highlight of my career so far because of this was performing with Delfeo Marsalis at Crooners when we had the opportunity to talk about the project and he invited me to play with him. So I've benefited, and the community has benefited. I actually have received many, many comments from Native Americans who have been at the concert or have listened to the radio, the streaming on the radio of the concert, that they were unaware of all of these grand masters in jazz who had Native heritage, and it gives their culture pride. So one of those individuals was Oscar Pettiford, who was from Minneapolis, grew up in Minneapolis, graduate of North High School, three-quarters Native American, and he contended that the basic rhythm of jazz was Native American. Given that, I would like to perform one of his tunes. It's a ballad, and I'm going to intersperse that with a Lakota love song. And by hearing the two, possibly you'll hear the connection between Native American music and rhythms and jazz. Thank you.
fantastic. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members.
Blazer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was told early on in my career in switching into the non-commercial side when I had to start coming before you that, in general, you really don't want to hear from lobbyists. You'd prefer to hear from people directly from the organization. So here I am. And I also learned when it comes to legacy, rather than hearing from me and telling the great stories and things and speaking on behalf of the artists, I wanted to actually bring an artist who could not only share his art, but actually say that he personally has benefited and has been able to get more gigs and get more experience directly as a result of the legacy program. One of the things that the Amperz Legacy Programs does is, in a nutshell, it provides access in many forms. It provides artists across Minnesota with more access to larger audiences, and in some cases, audiences for the very first time. From, if you look at the monitor, the band performing in studio at Radio K, to the picture as a hobbyist photographer that I absolutely had to include this because I thought it was just an absolutely incredible picture. One of the winning entries from a photo contest at KBFT in Boys Fort. These artists would not necessarily be gaining the access to nearly as many people. Sure, they would be out there, but the legacy funds combined with the public broadcasting and community broadcasting behind it provides these artists with significantly more exposure. And those artists are not exclusively adults. The young lady to the left, without the instrument, I believe the one to the right is male, is Layla Lowry. And she was part of Jazz 88's Home Slice competition. And she is a local jazz vocalist. She got the opportunity to actually go in and professionally record her very own extended play, which was recorded professionally and is now actually airing on some of the stations. Then if you switch over to other students, KSRQ and Thief River Falls, and I can't stress again enough that this, similar to what Minnesota Public Radio was saying, we're just scratching the surface here. There's no way I can touch on all of the programs. That's a 130-page document that we turn into you about all of the programs. But up in Thief River Falls, they record and broadcast the local high school bands and choir concerts. So not only can the students go back and hear it later, if for some reason the parents can't attend, it's archived and they can play it. Or if grandma and grandpa are down in Florida, because we know that Minnesota snowbirds go to Florida and they want to listen in, they can be down in Florida and they can take a listen to their child's or grandchild, I should say, programs and choir programs and concerts back in Thief River Falls. It also gives the public more access. It's not just the artists who are benefiting. The Radio Waves program in Grand Marais attracted 1,250 people. Now, to us, that may not sound like that many, but keep in mind that the population of Grand Marais is 1,300 people. So that's a pretty big turnout for a local music festival. KMSU in Mankato records the Mankato Symphony Orchestra, and with really high-quality broadcast equipment. They use legacy funds to record them, play them back, and archive them. People who are not able to attend in person, for whatever reason, maybe they can't afford it. Maybe they are busy. They may love music, but they can't get there. They may be a shut-in for medical reasons. For whatever reason they can't attend, because of the legacy funds, they now have access to those concerts that they wouldn't otherwise have access to. The students get more access to the arts. As Mr. Fantuzzo was saying, his project directly involved students, and you saw their work. One of the really neat things about KBFT's programs in Boys Fort, just about any time they bring in an artist, a musician, even a poet, those artists, musicians, and poets then go to the schools also in addition to the public performance. They will go to the Boys and Girls Clubs and the after-school programs, and they will go in and work with the students and answer questions and perform and interact with them. KMSU in Mankato this past year created an orchestra concert specifically to attract students because we know how important reaching students is as part of this. And education is a very, very, very big part of what we do with our legacy programming. We have produced two powwows. The second one, Ampers itself produced. Representative Erdahl attended. The first powwow, then Governor Dayton attended. Secretary of State Simon attended our second powwow. The goal of the powwow was to bring people to a Native American event that they would not otherwise have attended. It was designed specifically to get non-Natives to not only come in and observe, but to participate. They were actually allowed, and I actually participated in the grand entry. And what we realized, most people don't realize that Native American powwows, about 98% of them, are free and open to the public. But people don't realize that. But not only do they not realize that, they still don't necessarily feel that the invitation is there. And I understand that. Think about yourself for a moment. If you've never been to a Roman Catholic church, a Jewish synagogue, a Muslim temple, whatever, and you want to go, are you going to just walk in? Without an invitation, probably not. So we created the invitation, invited people to come to the powwow, but we also created what I like to call powwow for dummies. Powwows don't have programs. And when I first talked about doing this, and I was consulting with Native Americans for it, I was told they don't do programs. And I said, okay, I agree. We're not going to do a program. We're going to do an educational pamphlet so that people don't go and stick their foot in their mouth and call regalia a costume, so people know when they can take a picture and when they don't. So we created this, and this was actually so successful that I got a call from the Red Lake School saying, can we get 100 copies of these, please? Actually, let me change that, Joel, 110. And I said to the principal, sure, I'd be more than happy to, but can I ask why? He said, for my students. And I said, aren't you teaching it? He said, yeah, but this boils it down so easily for them to digest. We'd really like to use it. Absolutely, not a problem. We made it available to them. We also stress education in segments like MN90, Minnesota History in 90 Seconds. We have produced over 500 segments of Minnesota History in 90 Seconds. We put them on best of CDs. You should have each received a copy of the CD. It's like I didn't. Oh, I do have. You should have each received a copy of the CD. If you were out at the state fair and I gave you one, feel free to give it to somebody else. If you don't know somebody else who wants it, please don't get rid of it. Give it back to me, and we will distribute it because the stations do distribute it. They are in very high demand, especially among teachers. And for those of you who have not heard one, here is a segment of Minnesota History in 90 Seconds.
Welcome to MN90, Minnesota History in 90 Seconds.
There are loons. And then there are loons. Of the feathered variety, there are the red-throated loon, the yellow-billed loon, the Arctic loon, and the Pacific loon. But Minnesota's loon of choice is the common loon, with its black bill, red eyes, and patterned black and white feathers. The common loon also has four calls. The tremolo is used when a loon is alarmed or wants to tell lake residents, yeah, I'm here. The yodel is the loon's way of staking out territory. My side of the lake, your side of the lake. The hoot stands in for loon chit-chat between partners or parents and chicks. What'd you say? Never mind. And the wail, that haunting sound that lifts through an open window on a warm night, is a loon search call. Where are you? Where'd you go? Minnesota has more loons than any other state. That could explain why in 1961, the common loon became Minnesota's state bird.
MN90 is produced by Ampers, the first radio for Minnesota's communities. Made possible by funding from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Online at mn90.org.
Now, when we first started developing those, we had tunnel vision. We were developing them for radio. And when we got our booth at the Minnesota State Fair, which is just a couple booths down from you in the education building, after our first year of handing out the CDs, I had some people come up and ask for multiple CDs. And, okay, are they hot on the black market? No, I'm a teacher, and I'd like to bring them back to my other social studies teachers. We'd love to use them. And what we found was that we thought they were originally going to be too short for teachers, and they said, no, they were perfect. They're idea starters. They can play it and start a conversation. So we also create other programming that is longer in nature that might be podcasts that the teachers then turn around and will assign to be used at home. So what that really means to you as legislators, as far as when you are funding our programming, we're legally double dipping because we are providing programming to the listeners, and then we are also providing programming to the teachers, and we're also archiving it and making it available to future generations as well, so you're getting far more bang for your buck. A few other just quick examples of some of the educational aspects of our legacy programming. WTIP and Grand Marais happened to stumble across letters written by a World War I veteran who was serving and writing back home to Grand Marais, and they turned that into a radio series of reading those stories. And I touched on earlier in my testimony about the hands-on opportunity, and the hands-on opportunity runs as young as high school in youth radio projects and up to the college age. Typically, they are clubs, extracurricular activities. They're not a part of the actual formalized education curriculum. So while KUMD, for example, has about 50 students involved, they are involved on a club level. They come in after class to learn how to host a show and do the production that they are doing, or do live from studio. Can't remember if it's A, B, or C, because each one of them have a different one. The Radio K example is the Real College podcast that gives the students hands-on opportunity to actually be utilizing the equipment itself. Just quickly, some of the big statistics that is in the 131-page report that each one of you received by emails, but we'll touch on briefly as I wrap up. To date, from the beginning, we have created more than 17,500 radio segments. That does not include all of the live segments. Many of the live events are recorded and archived. Many of them just don't make good radio, so they aren't turned into radio programs. We're not going to, if it's an event that does not make sense to go on the radio, we're not going to record it and put it on the air because it just does not make good radio. We've created more than 22,800 hours of legacy programming. In FY18, this past fiscal, we had 1,440 students who were involved, and we paid 544 artists and 319 contractors. As I wrap up, our request for the FY20-21 biennium from this committee, we would like to ask for $3.4 million. We are asking for $1.7 per year, which is the same amount that we received in year two of the previous biennium. We received $1.5 year one, $1.7 in year two. In year one, we did have two of our smaller, newer stations that did not receive any funding, and so that is how we're coming to the 1.7 for each year. So with that, Chair Lilly, members, I wrap up our presentation, and I'm available, as is Mr. Fantuzzo, should you have questions.
Thank you very much. Great presentation. I have some questions. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Glazer. Just want to recognize some of the efforts that you've done over the years. I appreciated being invited to the powwow. That opening was kind of impressive, especially those of us expected to dance a little bit as we went. You did a fine job, Mr. Glazer. And Senator Saxog, I was particularly impressed with his. I'm a little too Norwegian to do a very good job with that, but I made a half-hearted attempt. But it was, I think, a very impressive event. At the end, they had a meal of native foods, and some of us helped out by serving, not just eating. Now, this the recording the best of Minnesota Night. How many of these have you done?
Mr. Chair,
Oh, sorry, Mr. Glazer. I was actually reading.
That's okay. So I'm sorry. Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, members, if the question is how many CDs, that's volume four, and we typically give out about 10,000 CDs, so we're up to volume four. We've done a little over 500 segments total. We are working right now on volume five.
Thank you.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have an earlier one, of course, that did have a segment on the biggest ball of twine made by one man in Darwin. I noticed on this one.
That was a big seller.
It was. Very popular, I'm sure. And this one has a segment, number 38, I think, Neil Gaiman's Minnesota Gods. I'm assuming none of those are Minnesota legislators.
I'm not sure that was a question. Mr. Glazer.
I'm not sure if that was a question either.
Okay. Well, there's a backstory, of course, about that, but...
Representative Erdahl, or do you want an answer?
Well,
Mr. Glazer.
Back a few, well, just a few years ago, of course.
Mr. Chair, I believe what Representative Erdahl is referring to, Representative Erdahl members, there was a backstory there, and actually as a result of it, AMPRS created a compliance committee that we are very proud of to ensure that all of our dollars are appropriated and spent properly, and we have a compliance committee that reviews all the work of the stations to make sure that we are in compliance, and I believe perhaps the reference is to a situation where a different grantee received a large sum of money for one event for an author to speak. And
oh, that does ring some bells. Representative Erdahl.
Mr. Glazer did a far better job of explaining that than I would have done, other than Representative Matt Dean got into a little bit of an issue with that one.
Were you drawn into it with a similar name by chance?
Well, yes, I was. Representative Dean made some, shall we say, not complimentary remarks about Mr. Gaiman, because this was this event took place in his district, and he received comments from all over the world. Apparently, Neil Gaiman is a very popular writer, and Representative Dean didn't know that, and we were getting email from Australia, England, all over the world, and then a cartoon came out in which someone, I believe it would be Neil Gaiman laying on a beach, and someone kicking sand in his face. And it said on the person who was kicking the sand on his face, Dean Erdahl. Well, I had nothing to do with this. So I, you know, recognized that and contacted them. And they changed it to Matt Dean, making it more of a accurate story.
Representative Green, I believe you. Were you done?
I was done probably 5 minutes ago.
Well, Representative Green.
I hope the discs are more entertaining. Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, Mr. Fantuzzo, Fantuzzo, I believe. Thank you for your little segment there. That was really good. I do like the flute. I've been asked, so that's why I'm asking this question. Do your stations and the things that you put out, do they meet all the ADA requirements? I know that sounds a little funny, but there's a lot of laws to do with disabilities and things like that.
Mr. Glazer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, members, we are joined today by representatives from Minnesota Council on Disability, I've noticed, in the audience and over my shoulder here. We work very closely with them. And, in fact, we just wrapped up a series called Keep Moving Forward that we did with them. We do everything that we possibly can to make all of our content as accessible as we possibly can, to say that we comply with every letter of the law of the ADA, because when I attempted and I could not understand all of it, we asked an attorney to review all of it. It is incredibly overwhelming, but what I can say is we have a very strong partnership with Council on Disability. We take steps so that things like transcripts, if you go, because what we're doing is audio, so if you look at our website, there will be a button that says transcript. We worked with them to have an audit of our website to make sure that as we developed the new website here 2 years ago, we consulted with them to make it as accessible as was possible. There were some things that were outside of our budget that would have made it more accessible, but we are as compliant as we possibly can. And our goal is, because we, when we talk about serving underserved communities, I just met with Council on Disability last week, and that is a absent narrative in an underserved community. So we see that as a community that we serve, and so we work to make everything as accessible as possible.
Thank you, Thank Representative you. Green.
Yep.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I missed the context of this, of these instruments, when you explained this earlier. Is this a project that, let's say, a music educator in the Roseville school system could get a resource person to introduce this idea or to have that person in? Or how is this accessible to people?
Mr. Glazer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, members, this particular project actually was specifically through Jazz 88, one of our member stations, and they sought out schools that wanted to participate. That said, if there are schools that are interested, I would be more than happy to take it to one of the stations and see if it was something that they could incorporate.
Representative Hausman.
I'll connect with him later about that.
Please do.
Well, thank you very much for coming today. I just really want to say how much I really think this is a great idea. I represent East Metro communities, and I was hoping Representative Zhang was still here, but our Hmong neighbors have just been really great leaders about welcoming people to visit cultural events, and if you're ever invited to Hmong events, like a New Year or something, they're really neat, and they really try to make people feel welcome and inclusive. And I think there's some lessons that some of us traditional Minnesotans, I don't know how many people I could probably get to go to Lutefisk, but I think we could learn some lessons. A couple years ago, I had an opportunity to travel the country on a bicycle, and I remember going through New Mexico, and NPR radio was on in the home being broadcast live. And I remember, I don't know if this is one of your radio channels, but in the middle of Mississippi or Alabama, somebody I met, he asked where I was from. I said, Minnesota. He said, he listened to a bluegrass channel. And I think that's, and it was like every Thursday night or something. And is that one of your, and it was just, he faithful listener to that. Is that one of your channels, Mr. Glazer?
Chairman Lilly, members, two of our stations do carry bluegrass programming, Jazz 88, on Saturday morning, and I know that is streamed very heavily, and actually there are some other stations outside of Minnesota that pick that up. KVSC in St. Cloud does some bluegrass Saturday morning on Fritz as well, and I believe it's Hard with 18. I apologize. I think there is one other, but we do, I know for sure, two and perhaps three that do bluegrass programs, specific programs, not entire channels.
Well, thank you. And then, you know, I was touched by the Mr. Fantuzzo, by your playing the music, and that was powerful. And thank you for sharing that. I think, you know, the fact that this art that you brought in from these students, and I think there's a long tradition of us using, you know, what's around us. I mean, that's just looks like you're from construction, but it looks like it was just like a cement pipe, wasn't it? Or it's just a tube and turn it and then doing art on it. But isn't that some of the best art that we can see? And that's so thank you for your work. Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much for coming today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
For being good stewards of the legacy money. And with that, we are adjourned.